Jackson, I'm going to introduce my mom. My mom is Aubrey, and there she is.
Okay, I'm done. That's it. I'm Aubrey. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. So first of all, I'm going to close this. So I'm going to close my eyes for a second and hope that God shows up because I don't want to waste your time. So again, I am Aubrey. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. I am alumni from here. I came in 2008 in April, and I did not stay sober. I learned a ton when I was in here. It actually wasn't this building. It was the one on Cross Park, but I learned a ton. It was the only one and only time I've ever been to treatment. And I did not understand that my disease was about, I didn't understand anything about my disease, honestly. I just thought I was having a good time. I really enjoyed the way I felt whenever I drank and used. And without a drink and a drug in my body, I felt like my skin was made of duct tape and my bones were electric wire. That's how I felt. Like I was just like, just all the time. That's how I felt. If you knew the way I felt, you would stop judging me and you'd give me some dope. And you'd stop writing me felonies and breaking up with me and being mad at me because I can't show up for Christmas or whatever. My experience with treatment was that I learned a ton about my disease. You know, I learned that I have an allergy, as we all do. Either that or you're having a really fun vacation. I have an allergy to alcohol and dope, and I don't get a choice once the first one is in my body. I lose the power of choice in drink and drug. I lose the power of choice in... I was discussing this with my friends on the way over here. Everything about me changes. And I'm not any happier about it than you are. But everything about me changes. I become unrecognizable. I'm not kind. I'm not generous. I'm completely consumed with self. I don't care who I have to step on or step over or step through to get what I need. And it's not personal. I just can't stand the way I feel inside of my skin all by myself. I like to say I'm home alone with a crazy person. When I first was in here, you know, I came from jail. And I had a 10-year sentence. And I didn't have any bail or bond. And I did not serve that 10-year sentence because Judge Lynch pulled for me and said, before we send her off to TDC, she's never been to treatment. So I know she's been on probation for the last 5 years. With 48 of 48, the last 4 years, I should say, it was a five-year probation sentence. 48 of 48 months, dirty UAs. And I had an inability. I couldn't not piss dirty, you know. I didn't want to piss dirty, you know. I was like, maybe this time they're going to catch, you know, they're going to throw me away or whatever. And I would, like, bind my hands with, like, gauze and be like, I can't unless you want to hold the cup, you know? Like, I can't. My hands are broken, you know? I would do all kind of, like, maneuvers so that I couldn't do the UAs. And looking back now, I notice, I mean, they still just mark me dirty, you know what I mean? They were like, that's ridiculous. You fucking kidding me? But at the time, I was like, oh, I got one over on them. The delusion is astonishing. So I showed up to treatment and I was pretty happy to be here, you know, cause the alternative was 10 years in prison. Right. So I was pretty stoked. But I didn't want to change anything about me, you know, when I got here, they were like unhappy with my clothing and they were unhappy with my shoes and they were unhappy with my attitude. And I was like, I don't give a fuck. You know, I did not care. You know, I had a bad attitude. I did not care. And I was completely still consumed with self. And that's what I want to talk to you about today is that alcoholism is a disease of selfishness. Whenever you take that first drink and drug, you are the only person that feels better. and that the babies don't feel better and your baby's daddies don't feel better and your mama and your boyfriend and your, you know, nobody feels better. But you, you know, and you may feel better for about 30 seconds. And then it all is just about chasing that first 30 seconds. At least that's my disease. I'll just talk to you about my disease. And what it was like for me is I showed up. By the time I left here, like I say, I had a lot of information about my disease, but I didn't know how to not use. I just knew that I was an addict and alcoholic of the hopeless variety that I'd been using for the last long time. You know, I started using every day at 15, and I used every day until I was 29. Every day, cocaine and vodka, that was my drugs of choice. And I had to use. I mean, I really had to. And my experience was that, you know, I felt like when I came into treatment, I learned that I really wasn't such a bad person sober. I kind of liked who I was. I laughed all the time, and I was intriguing, and I felt like that little bit of consciousness was enough to allow the universe or God or whatever you want to call it to kind of open the window of my soul and just kind of blow a little bit in there, just to like, you know, just like just a little bit on the back of my neck to where I was like, well, that was kind of nice. Like, what was that about? But then I left here and I had an inability to stay sober. I literally drove out of the parking lot, drove directly to the dope house. I was like, oh, I'm going to stay sober forever. I'm going to, like, oh, this is a bet. Like, me and my litter mates, we're all going to get, like, go into business to get, that's what we do in here, right? Like, and we're going to do this. We're going to get a house and blah, blah. And then I literally left here and drove directly to the dope house and then went to the liquor store immediately. And I really had the desire in my heart to not drink and use. I promise you I did. But I still, even though I didn't have a drink and a drug in my body, I had still lost the power of choice in drink and drug. And the reason is because that doesn't come from hanging around sober people. That removal of that desire to want to fill that hole. It doesn't come from going to meetings. It doesn't come from the sabbatical you get in the 30-day program or 60-day or 90-day or whatever. It comes from working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had not done that. At the time, it was only a four that you did a step a week. This was many years ago. I'm 8.5 years sober. It was a step a week. That was the program then, and it was under old management and everything else, and I don't know if they still do that. I have no idea. But what I can tell you is that did not work for me. My disease needs instant gratification. I need to feel better now or I'm going to bolt. I don't have time to not feel good. I don't know if that's spoiled or just selfish. I don't know. But that's just the way I am. Like, if I don't feel good, I got to go. You know, and what I can tell you is I felt good when I was protected in here, but when they let me loose, I was just there with me and I didn't have a choice. So I immediately went to drinking and drugging but now I had a deeper problem. I had a probation officer that runs all of McKinney Falls Parkway. And she was coming to my house every other day. This was my new caseload. And I was like, it's a little inappropriate, don't you think? Like, it's like, you're like stalking me at this point, you know? And she showed up just like she said she was going to. And she said, you know, I'm not going to UA you this time. Because I know that you're going to do what's right. And I know that she knew that I was using. I know she did. Looking back, I know she did. She said, I'm going to let you continue to work your program. And I'll check back with you in 2 days. And I mean, you know, it was very difficult. For that next 6 weeks. Also, first of all, I got scared shitless, right? I mean, she came to my, and I knew, I mean, I didn't have any more chances. That was it. I get the 10-year sentence, one shot, that's it. I'm back in the 10-year sentence. That was the deal. That was the Judge Lynch deal. And I was like, you know, I'm super scared, but I couldn't not drinking you. So I thought, I'm going to call my littermates like I said I was going to. And we went to one meeting. This is my first meeting I'd ever been to on my own. And I was loaded. And, you know, it was like, whatever. And we went to Schlitterbahn that day, so it kind of took the edge off. And I used all day long at Schlitterbahn. And then we went to the Westlake, like, 8:30 meeting or whatever it was. And I walked into the room, and I immediately felt like I did not belong there. Like, this is not for me. These people are not drinking. I'm certain they're not selling cocaine. And I don't want to be here at all. But I had, you know, I'd gotten there with some girls, and so I couldn't just leave. I wasn't by myself. And somebody shared in the room that this man shared, and he was glowing in the dark, and he shared that he was so blessed that he could hardly stand it. And I was like, he's got the good shit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I need to hook up with that guy for sure. Like, he's got the primo. So after the meeting, I kind of went around him kind of like a shark. I was like, you know, just waiting for him to notice me, you know. And eventually he was like, do I know you? And I was like, no, do you want to? I mean, I just used my, you know, my street sense. I just used whatever I had. And that's all that was in the pocket. You know, I wasn't trying to come like a lady or anything. It was just blah. And so he said, yes, as a matter of fact, I think I do. And so we, exchanged numbers. But honestly, it was his joy that attracted me to him. I mean, he was just radiating joy. And I was like, I felt like if anybody in this room knows how to get the good shit, it's him. For sure. You know what I mean? And I mean, I went after it just like you would in the street, you know? Like, you know, he's got the uncut. We're going for him. Right? And so went for the pure. And so so I didn't call him for a couple weeks because I wasn't sober, you know, and it's difficult to keep appointments and do what you say and hang out with a sober person that I was all of a sudden, I was really uncomfortable about, you know, the cojones I had grown in the meeting to go up and ask him, you know, for a contact. I was scared that he would know who I really was. And, you know, when it came down to it, he called me and he said, you know, I'm not going to chase you around. So you've kind of ditched me like 3 or 4 times in the last 2 weeks. So I'm kind of over this. And he showed me he had self-respect. And that was undeniable for me. I was like, okay, no, now I'll meet you right here, right now, wherever you want. Because I was like, that was like, not only does he have joy, but oh, he's radiating self-respect, which is... I wasn't hanging around anybody doing that. And so we met at a Starbucks. And I didn't even know what Starbucks was. I mean, I didn't understand paying $8 for a cup of coffee. So it didn't have any liquor in it. You know, it sounded retarded to me. So we met in there, and I was like, I don't drink coffee. I don't even understand this place. And he was like, well, do you want to go somewhere else? And, you know, I'm going to share this with y'all because I want to be real with you. I want to show you that God can show up anywhere. I was like, do you want to go have sex? Because that's all I knew to do. I didn't know how to have intimate relationships. I just knew how to, that's all I knew how to be. You know, I just knew how to be myself. So we did that, and then that was fun. We had a good time, and then I just continued to act sober. I didn't want him to think I wasn't sober because I really liked him. And so we just kind of, you know, I just kind of played my little dance and, you know, I'd go on a run for a couple days and then just come and crash in his bed. And that's what I did. And I would have him talk to me. I'd be like, just talk to me, just talk to me. So that I felt normal. And loved. And he would, so about 2 weeks later, I was like, you know, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can only keep up the gig for a minute, you know, because then I wanted to use, right? And we're hanging out. And so anyways, I can't do this anymore. I'm an escort, and I'm not sober, and I have a serious cocaine and vodka problem, and so there. So you were probably done with this, right? So I'm going to bolt. And he was like, no, we're good. Like, that's not who you are. That's just what you're doing. It's a means to an end. And I totally get it. Do what you need to do, baby girl. And I was like, okay, so I love you so much right now. I'm like, let's do this. I mean, that's really all we were looking for anyways, right, girls? We're like, we just want somebody to love us for who we are and to say, you're not a crack whore, you stupid crack whore. Oh my God, super original. I just wanted somebody to love me for who I was. And he was, you know, he was so solid in his program. He could do that. He was so solid. He knew exactly who he was. So he was able to talk to me about who I was. Because he wasn't threatened or put out by my choices. It was beautiful. So I was in, you know, for sure, for life. I was like, I'm in. So he watched me wiggle around for a little bit, about two more weeks, and evade my probation officer. And he was like, you don't look like you're having that much fun anymore. And I wasn't. I will tell you, if this is your first time in treatment, best of luck to relapse. It ruins your high forever. I don't understand it. I don't know. Mathematically, I don't get it. Like, how can I come here for 28 days, learn a little bit about dope, and then leave, and then all of a sudden it doesn't work the same anymore? Like, scientifically, that doesn't make sense to me. But it was the truth. Once I left here, I couldn't get the same high. I couldn't get high with impunity. It was like that window, that consciousness of window that was cracked open just a little bit for me, and that bit of spirit that blew in the backside of my neck mattered. It was enough to be like, yeah, there's something different, and you're worth more. You have purpose, and it's not that. And guess what? The condition that you're medicating doesn't even exist. All these character defects that I define myself as, like I'm a this and I'm a that. If they only knew about this about me, then they would. It's a bunch of fucking lies. You're a beautiful, innocent, amazing child of God, regardless of what you've done. That's your essence. That's who you are. And that's what he reminded me of that day. So as I'm vomiting, he's like, we should get married. I'm like, okay. And he decided that, you know, he felt like I needed a sufficient anchor to the light. And I did. It was a fact. And the reason I tell you all this story, this isn't a love story, but it is that God shows up anywhere he needs to. And if it's not a rule, and there's rules in treatment, so you got to follow those. But if it's not a rule in the big book, and people are telling you to do it, it's just an opinion. It's just an opinion. And it's running through the filter of somebody else's judgment where it hasn't worked out for them. I didn't follow one opinion, and I'm doing fine. But I will tell you, I followed all the rules, all the directions in the big book, all of them, even the ones I hated. Like, we must, I don't know the fucking word, be rid of self or it kills us. And they don't mean your ego, right? Like, oh my God, who am I going to be? Oh, they're not going to like me anymore. Like, I don't even know who I am anymore, man. And it's like the first year of sobriety. You're like, I don't even know who I am. And then all of a sudden you find that's because who you were was filtering the light that was trying to shine out of you. You were walking around with an umbrella of glum and not quite enough on you. Sobriety kicks that thing off and is like glow. You have purpose and you have passion and you have compassion for people that are still walking around with this disease that are dying of it. And your purpose is to help them. And all I can tell you is when you follow that purpose, God writes the fat paychecks, the fat ones. It's a fact. Just like the dope world, the fat paychecks. You know, in the dope world, I could never keep anything. Could anybody keep anything? Because it didn't belong to you. You didn't earn it. It didn't belong to you. I haven't so much as lost an earring back in 8.5 years. I swear to God. I can't lose anything. Nothing. Why? Because it's mine. It's mine. I made my amends. I don't owe anybody money. I tithe. Because I find that I make more money if I do that. It's selfish. But it works out for me. You know, I do all the things in the book that are in the big book and sometimes in other big books too. I don't believe in sin, so you're not going to get me there. I only look at certain parts of the big book, you know, the parts that I like, where they're having a good time. You know, because it says that we continue to watch where religious people can help us. We don't shy away. We have a home also in Miami Beach. By the way, I married that guy. He's sitting over there. That's our baby. We got married. I'll finish that story, I guess, real quick. We got married 100 days later, 100 days after I was sober. I've been sober 8.5 years. Our son is 7. He's been sober 9.5 years. I mean, guys, this stuff is not for wimps in the beginning. But it makes pirates into princesses. It does. It does something. It's magic. My life is... You have no idea. I really believe that if I care for you, if I help you, God's happy to give me anything I want because it's my Father's good pleasure to do so. I have a child and I will give him anything he wants as long as it won't hurt him because it's my pleasure. Because I can. If sobriety is about this, I'm not staying here. I'm not going to stay. I'm not going to stay and have to white knuckle and grip my way through it and grind my teeth. I'm not doing it. I won't do it. I won't do it. I don't know if that's just me, but I think God knew that about me. I think he knew it about me the moment I walked in the door. He said, this one's not going to hang on. I better hook her up real quick. And she's going to need this to be impressed and this to hang on and this to ride. I think he knows. There's I don't know, what's my time? Where are we at? 20 after? Okay. Thank you. Let me get back on track. Okay, so my experience with sobriety. So what it was like for me is it worked really well. And then I got in trouble. And then I came here. And then it stopped working. I don't know. It doesn't make... Oh, he's fine. He can walk around. He's fine. Crawl around. What happened is once I used, I couldn't calm that beast in me anymore. After I came here, I couldn't make it work. The dope stopped working after you're here. That was my experience. What it's like now is my life so blessed. I can hardly stand it, right? So here's the deal. It's a recipe, like a cake recipe. And it doesn't matter if you like cake, if you don't believe in cake, you're gluten intolerant, if you bake the fucking cake, it's still gonna be cake. No matter what, you don't have to think anything about it. If you do it the way it says on the box, it's going to be what it says it's going to be. If you do it the way it's outlined for you on page 59 of that big blue book, it's going to be exactly like my life. And I swear to God, not one friggin' movie star in Hollywood is wishing that they had anything less than what I have. Not only do I have everything I want materialistically, but God, you know, all that duct tape and all that electricity, it's like silk. It's just like, I'm like air. So, no, he's fine. He's fine. So much peace, so much joy. And what really keeps me peaceful and joyful now is helping you guys. I gotta wake up in the morning. I do my meditation and prayer. I do my morning inventory stuff. You know, what's my day gonna look like? Correct my motives. I do my inventory at night. And in the daytime, I'm as helpful to alcoholics specifically. And addicts specifically. Not like at the nursing home. I'm sure that's fine. But I just don't think that it's our purpose. I don't think it's our purpose. You know, I'm not saying you can't do that stuff too. It's good. But you have this disease for a reason. And only we can hear it from you. It doesn't work the other way. Ironically, you know, people go to, therapy and counseling and all the. I can't go in a room and talk about me for an hour and then feel better about me. It just doesn't work. I need to go in a room for an hour and talk about you. I need to stop thinking about me. And then all of a sudden, whatever it was that felt all wound up and tight inside of me feels loose and airy again. I don't understand it. It's like the thing, you know, with the cocaine that worked before and then doesn't work out. I don't understand it. But I just know it's real. And I can tell you this, I did get the fuckets. about 11 months sober. This time I was pregnant. We were married. So it would have been highly inconvenient. So we were new monogamous. Neither one of us had ever been monogamous relationship. We were married. We were newly sober. And now I'm pregnant. And so I had a lot on my plate. But anyway, it's neither here nor there. I got the fuckets. And he fought me for about 3 hours on it. And I said, you know, this is what I want to do. And you can't stop me. So we drove, he put me in the convertible and we drove over to the east side and pulled through a, I don't know, it was a 7-Eleven or something. An old school. Pulled up, walked up to the car and threw the dope in the car. And Lane gave him a couple $100. I think it was like $200. And I wanted to go there. But the moment that old school put the dope through the window and put it into my hand, I was like, oh my God, I can't do this. I can't do this. And I believe that that entity that I was working for those previous 11 months showed up for me and recoiled me as if from a hot flame, just like it says it will do. Now, if I hadn't been working a program before that, I guarantee you that fuckets would have turned into a relapse and probably a divorce and probably an abortion or whatever, adoption or whatever. Because when I start using, I can't stop and I don't care about love at all, except for the love of myself. So we pulled out of the parking lot and we pulled down the ramp to get back on Riverside, and a giant flock of parrots flew in front of the car. No lie. No lie. I had somebody with me. My husband was there. Big green and blue parrots. In Austin. True story. Giant flock of them. Have you seen them? Okay. It's crazy. Well, at this time, you know, 10 years ago, they were not all over anywhere other than like Brazil. And I was like, what the fuck was that? You know? And he was like, parrots. Oh my God. Anyway, I'm constantly looking for signs of being reassured that what I'm doing is right. And I promise you, if your heart is in alignment with the universe, the signs are everywhere that what you're doing is right. Right here, right now. It's the right thing to do. He said, well, I guess we better go to a meeting then. So we left there and we did go to a meeting, and I have stayed sober. And to be honest with you, that was probably the best thing that could have happened to me, those fuckets that day. Because since then, I knew there was no reason for me to ever have the obsession again. He would just recoil me. What was the point of dawdling in those thoughts? Just let it go. I don't belong there anymore anyways. I belong here. And he wants to care for me here. And he can't care for me out there. Because I don't even care for me. And then I can't care for you. And that makes him sad. Right before we came, I was on the phone with a sponsee who's been using for the last 3 weeks. She got behind some heroin as a result of oral surgery. Watch out for oral surgery. True story, or any surgery. And probably 50% of y'all are here from... I mean, it just happens, you know. But I'm going to tell you what. I've had 4 surgeries since I've been sober. I'm not a heroin addict. I will give you that. But I will tell you The same God of my understanding that recoiled me that day for working my program the previous 11 months is the same God who puts me back on that train track every time I get off my surgery medication. I give my medication to someone that I love and I trust, my husband primarily. I follow doctor's orders directly. I don't take any psychotropic medication because I'm crazy, I promise. But nothing's going to fix it. This is the way God wants me. I'm more useful this way. I take good care of my body. I try to eat healthy. But mostly I take care of you. I take care of you. I love you. I love you so much. I really do. I mean that. I hope that you know I mean it. My little sponsee doesn't want to come in. I've been talking to her for 21 days. Every day. I think I'm ready. Yeah, I'm going to be ready. Yeah, I'm going to be ready at 4:30. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I can't overdose. You don't understand. She weighs about 90 pounds. And, she's doing a gram and a half of heroin a day. I'm like, oh, baby, the tolerance like that. Y'all pray for her. It's the same out there. It's exactly the same. It's always going to be the same. And you're going to think, oh, no. No, but T said it was going to be different. No. We got a new thing up in the couple girls up in the ring and it's fucking insane. It's fucking insane. It's exactly the same. Everybody gets hurt. Shit hits the fan. Nobody's happy. You end up in prison or dead. It's the same. But this continues to evolve. I have so far outgrown my maturity level. I mean, the things that the universe has entrusted me with is unbelievable. Stay. Do your steps, all 12 of them. I know it's crazy they would ask that of you. All 12 in the order they're defined as. Don't skip anything. Guess what? It doesn't have to be perfect. It's so funny. We come in and we're like, oh, it's got to be perfect. Like, 782 pages of fifth step, fourth step. This is what I need. It's got to be perfect. Line. Get the ruler out. The lines and the cut. Oh, my God. I didn't shower for like 6 days when I was using. Are you kidding me? Now it's like all of a sudden, no, it's got to be right. So weird. I don't even get my husband jokes. He tells his sponsees, write it on a bar napkin. Get it done. Do the work. My experience is this. If you are powerful for the dark out there, take that same magnitude and bring it into the light. Because I was powerful for the dark. It was very interested in me. It didn't let go lightly. It was, I had to change my phone number 6 times, 4 times the first month in recovery, because they want to find me. I know. I had to move 4 times in the first 6 months. They'd show up in my bedroom. They would just walk right in, just. Sometimes it wasn't convenient either, you know. You got to go. Uncomfortable. Do what it takes. Stay. Do all 12 steps. Get a sponsor. Do all 12 steps.
finish them before you leave here. Tell your counselor, I want to be done with the work before I leave here because I'm afraid to go out and I'm afraid I'm going to do what Aubrey said she did. I promise you, if you tell them that, they'll be like, all right, I got you. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Let's do it. And one last thing, and I'm going to finish. Bill Wilson, the founder of AA, the co-founder of AA, did his steps in 8 hours, okay? I just turned into a unicorn, right? It was like, whoa. Yes, 8 hours. He started them at about noon, and then he worked for a couple hours, and then he went to bed, and then he woke up, and he was like, oh, I should share this with someone else. I'm going to go walk around the hospital until I find a sicko. That's the way it worked. No, 5 months. I'm super important, and you don't understand. It's really deep. Okay. Whatever it is, you're using it to your own demise. Bring it into the light. Tear down the tinfoil off the crack windows. And let the light in. And you too will be amazed beyond your wildest dreams. Thank you.